Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wozni Lambray, joined as always by my partner out on the west side of Los Angeles, Nando Vila. What's going on with you, man?
You know, I'm celebrating that Nancy Pelosi is running for re-election. She announced she's running for re-election. This is going to be my last Woke Bros episode because I'm going to join her campaign as chief propaganda minister for the Nancy Pelosi campaign. Just make sure you guys are ready for some epic memes in your email. Subject lines like, listen, guys, I need help. And yeah, that's going to be all me running the Nancy Pelosi campaign.
Nancy Pelosi is literally the Leonardo DiCaprio as Jordan Belfort meme. I'm not fucking leaving.
Yeah.
I'm not fucking leaving. She is the epitome of that meme. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show. Of course, the New York Times puts out a piece about the greatness of, you know, the jobs report and how many people are quitting their jobs. And isn't it great? They're quitting jobs and starting consultant firms and, you know, becoming entrepreneurs. Isn't it just great? These people, and it's so contagious. They're white collar workers. It's just great. We get into New York Times tone deafness about the job numbers and what they actually mean. But first, hey man, I guess this isn't the worst news, honestly, when you consider the Biden administration's just complete lack of any wins and positivity. Justice Stephen Breyer, one of the, you know, ostensibly liberal judges on the Supreme Court, of which there are only three now, he is stepping down. He's announced his retirement while on his book tour, mind you. And this is important, Nando, of course, because Joe Biden and the Democrats get to fill his seat with a judge of their choosing, seeing as they do have the majority. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, it's nice. And I'm happy that the GOP won't be able to make it 7-2. However, you know, it's 6-3. Why is it 6-3? Because Obama got punked by Mitch McConnell, and Merrick Garland. Of course, not only that, of course, while Obama was still in office, Ruth Bader Ginsburg felt like she was just too important. There was no single other person on the planet who could vote with the other justices quite in the way that Ruth Bader Ginsburg could for liberal causes. And she was just too important to step down, Nando. Yeah. So she didn't.
You're just a typical man telling a woman to shut her mouth and step down. You know?
Right.
You don't realize.
Right.
Yeah. She doesn't owe you anything. RBG doesn't owe you anything.
Right. Exactly. Except for when the nation's abortion rights get stripped away because of her decisions. But that's neither here nor there. Of course, RBG refused to step down. Trump was able to fill her replacement. Freaking Scalia dies. Trump filled that replacement. And the balance of the court is what it is, right? And, you know, and I'm not no Supreme Court justice scholar or whatever, but, you know, there's this sense that every now and again, John Roberts, who is the biggest fucking corporate shill in the history of corporate shills, every now and again, he's stepping for gay rights, or every now and again, he wouldn't let them completely gut Obamacare. Every now and again, John Roberts would step in and whatever. But now it's 6-3. Stephen Breyer will be replaced by somebody. Nando, before we got on the show, said Joe had promised people that he would pick a chief justice from a specific demographic. But, and I'm going on long, but I do want to say this. Like, this dude almost didn't do it. Okay?
Yeah, he didn't want to do it.
They had been asking for a while for a while to do this. And he was on his book tour. And he's like, nah, I don't know. What's the big deal? Like, the court is pretty good. Just because we got conservatives, we're upstanding. We have credibility, blah, 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 blah. But I guess the pressure, enough pressure has gotten to him. I'm sure he got some concessions as to who the next person would be. But Breyer's finally stepping down, Nando.
I wonder if the tipping point was, I don't know if you saw in the news like a week or two ago, Neil Gorsuch, the conservative on the court, reportedly refused to wear a mask in the court and forced Sotomayor, who I guess had COVID and was immunocompromised or some shit, to do the court from like by Zoom, you know, like they were doing it in person and he wouldn't. I wonder if that was kind of like the tipping point where Breyer was like, okay, we can't have another one of these psychos in there. but yeah, I wouldn't count my chickens before they hatch, dude. You know, we're assuming they're going to be able to get someone in there. And it is not entirely clear to me that they can get Manchin and Sinema on board with a nominee. It's, you know, I think we can, you know, it's possible, but it's not, I don't think it's a slam dunk. I don't think it's guaranteed. You know, there was actually a GOP operative, some Republican operative was like, yeah, Biden should just ask Manchin who he wants and that's it, you know? But it's not entirely clear to me that they're gonna be able to do it, because I think that Manchin and Sinema are enjoying derailing the Biden presidency. Yep. And they're drawing the attention and stuff. And this is like another one. This is just another field in which they could do that. But yeah, Waz, we could talk about like who it could be, because, you know.
Oh, no, hold on. Biden, before we get into that, I just want to say one thing. Biden has nominated a bunch of lower court judges with the help of this Democratic Senate. Lower court judges, again, you probably don't get no headlines for obstructing that shit, but it should be said that Sinema and Manchin have played ball.
They voted for all of them.
For all of Biden's judges so far on the lower courts. You know, you guys can go, your mileage may vary on a cat like Matty Inglis. But he's like, look, man, without Joe Manchin, Biden wouldn't have been able to get through his lower court judges if a Republican was in there, which I guess is one way of making
it's the Joe stupidest Manchin thing. In, I mean, it's of course, but it's like it's the biggest like no shit Sherlock point. Like, yes, of course, Manchin is better than like a Republican. Okay, you know, but okay, like it's just like congrats, Matty.
It's just the weirdest, whatever. But it should be said that they have nominated judges on the lower courts with the help of Manchin and Sinema. But again, those things don't draw the headlines. They don't get you, you know.
He said also that Manchin voted for Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. Manchin voted for them.
Yes.
And it should be said that like Susan Collins voted for both of Obama's nominees or whatever. Like she voted for Kagan and Sotomayor. So like it's possible that, you know, if Manchin defects, that you know, Susan Collins or one of these people from the GOP defect. Again, it doesn't change the balance of power in the court. If they do get one in, it just kind of maintains a 6-3 conservative majority. But yeah, I don't know that it's guaranteed. I mean, I think people are assuming it's gonna just sail through, and I don't know. I mean, I'm just like seeing the contours of American
politics. I just don't see the proof that these people have an ability to whip up votes. Nobody's whipping up votes ever. Yeah. And so I like, you can't even do it for shit that's got 70% approval. You know, something as obscure as the Supreme Court, which again, I don't know. Maybe if they go with I don't know where they go with this. There's just nothing they can do. But I do want to talk about, you know, cause it did come up during the campaign who Biden, if he had the chance to fill a seat on the Supreme Court, who he might do it with, Nando. Who did Uncle Joe say that he wanted to fill the seat?
He's like, listen, Jack, if I get a chance to fill that seat, it's going to be a black chick, you know? And it's not a sex thing or anything like that. It's not like a weird porn thing. It's just, it's going to be a black woman.
God. Oh, yeah, Joe Manchin promised, I think he promised.
No, Joe Biden. Joe Biden.
Joe Biden promised some prominent Dems, you know, and prominent, important Dem donors who happen to be black, that one of the reasons why his candidacy was one worth supporting was that he would make it his business to make his Supreme Court justice pick the very first black woman in the history of the court, which, again, I'm not trying to poo-poo it and, you know, and say that it's not historic and important. Of course it is. I just want to know who this person, where this person comes from. Hopefully it's not just another fucking Harvard, Yale, Princeton clerk for X, Y, and Z in the fucking Supreme Court. Maybe we get somebody that's done public defense one time. Maybe we get somebody who's done, you know, consumer defense. Somebody who isn't just part of the corporate orthodoxy. You feel me?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so, you know, I'm not like an expert on this shit, but, you know, I'm not like one of these like court watchers, but like, you know, doing a little bit of reading before the show, there seems to be a consensus kind of number one pick, that there seems to be a consensus front runner, you know, like the pre-draft, you know, when there's someone who you know is going to be the number one overall pick, and it's this woman, Ketanji Brown Jackson. Okay, sadly, Waz, she went to Harvard. But for the purposes of, you know, she was raised in Miami, Florida, which is kind of cool.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dade and County, stand up.
Dade County, baby. And she was a public defender in D.C.
for a while. Okay. So, okay. Yes. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Somebody
she went to diverse. Harvard. Of course she went to Harvard.
But she went to Harvard. So we know we can't trust those people as far as we can throw them. But again, in the context of the Supreme Court, you know, having somebody who's worked in public defense, bro, like, damn, bro, like, that's
more historic. Yeah.
Come on. When you consider the Kavanaugh worked on that nigga, he worked on Bush v. Gore. Like, it's a difference. It's a difference of degrees, right? So, you know, I feel like that would be a pretty inspired pick. And I do think, you know, making the pick historic can work as a bulwark against, you know, certain types of attacks and all of that kind of thing. But who knows? Yeah. Manchin is throwing himself in front of, you know, similar things that seemed unimpeachable before. Well, like,
I think he may have voted for her. Manchin, so, like, I guess Biden nominated her to some court, like the D.C. federal bench or some shit, and Manchin voted for her. So, like, it would be weird for him to now against her. So again, that's the consensus. That's like, you know, when LeBron entered the draft.
Was coming out of high school. Yeah, coming out of Akron. Yeah. So she's the number one pick.
Yeah, she's the number one pick. But we got some sleeper picks.
Maybe. Okay. You know, let's hear some other, because he did say it had to be a sister now, a black woman.
Yeah. Yep. We got some names here. We got Justice Leandra Kruger. Who's on the California Supreme Court.
I don't think I've ever met a black Kruger. You think she's married to a white homie? Or what do we think that is?
Because Leandra sounds black, but Kruger, that's a... Leandra. There's one called Justice Candace Jackson Akiwumi, you know?
Leandra Kruger, I'm looking at her right now, Nando. She might be a mulatto shorty. She might be of mixed race. Which, of course, we don't do the one drop, whatever. You black, period. We don't do all that.
Yeah.
But we see it with a Kruger, because I'm just telling you, like,
on this show.
Listen, that's a policy. No, what I'm saying is, you know, a lot of times, like, black people have white last names, obviously, because of colonialism, slavery, all of that shit. Yeah. You know, you get Johnsons and, you know, McCormicks and all kinds of white names, but Kruger is just not one you see very
German.
Often. Yes, that's what
the Germans came in after. Yeah,
yeah, the Germans came after. Unfortunately for them, they came after slavery. It was too late.
They didn't
for
get
them
to didn't start get to
naming they tried to their, do it again in, their workforce in after World, themselves. World War II. Right, but so we got Leandra Kruger. Who else we got?
We got some woman named Michelle Childs. You know, she's a federal district judge in South Carolina. You know, she's on the short list, but Waz, you know, the the woman that I want to see get a look, you know? I feel like she's underrated. She might, you know, she's not like, she doesn't like leap off the charts in any, you know, she doesn't have like a super fast 40 or something like that, you know? But
she's,
I feel
but
like
she's got the intangibles, right?
She's got the intangibles. She got the name recognition.
Got you.
Vice President Kamala Harris on the court, baby. Do it, do it, Joe. You know you want to. You know she's annoying you in the White House. She's like calling you all day, asking for meetings that you don't want to be in. You don't want to like listen
Christ
to her.
Christ Almighty.
And you know, like you were bullied into choosing her because you know, like you needed a black woman and the vice president. You know, you never really wanted her anyway. This is a perfect opportunity to kill two birds with one stone. She's horribly unpopular. She's the heir apparent. She's going to get crushed by whoever she runs against. You know, this way you can just give her a graceful exit. You know, she becomes the first black woman on the bench. What do you
think? You know what's crazy is that I'm of two minds here. One, I do think she is being railroaded by the party apparatus, that they're already sodding the ground. Like, no, it's not Kamala. It won't be Kamala. Nope, not her. So she is getting screwed. Like, we recognize that. But again, like, she ran already. She sucked at it. And all she's done has been, she was attached to Joe Biden when he actually won. So it's not like she hasn't done anything or proven anything that would make you think like, this is going to be a better candidate this time around. So while she may be getting screwed in the sense that usually the vice president, Joe fucking Biden, gets to just write his ticket, you know, and people are going to support him and back him. Look, this is actually a good solution to things. She can't complain that she got completely railroaded. This is one of the most important jobs in the fucking world. You know what I mean?
Also, I mean, if I were her, I'd take it in a second. You know, like, better. She knows deep down in her heart that she's going to get crushed to Trump or whoever.
Lifetime appointment, bro. Like, what would be the point of that? So, yeah, I think that would actually be a good situation. Now, of course, you know, these freaking weirdo centrist right winger never Trumpers, Bill Crystal, because of course he's never been wrong about enough things. He's never been wrong about enough things going back from Iraq to multiple things. He wants Joe Biden to nominate Kamala for Supreme Court, and then Mitt Romney super ticket, the unstoppable. You know, bipartisan ticket, Nando, a ticket the that literally ticket. Nobody wants. Republicans don't want it. Democrats, so who wants this ticket? But yeah, Bill Kristol and his, you know, when him and his buddies get around and circle jerk, this is the type of things they masturbate to.
When's the last time any of these people like hung out with Republican voters? You know, like, when's the last? They assume that because Mitt Romney has an R next to his name, that these Republican voters fucking love that guy. And they fucking hate him. You know, they fucking hate him. Trump hated him. He hated Trump. I mean, there was that famous picture of the picture of Romney begging Trump to make him Secretary of State at the Manhattan restaurant, where Romney's turned around, like looking all like scared, and Trump is like got the most evil grin. But my favorite picture of all time. But I mean, it's these people think that kind of thing people like, and no one likes it. You know, like a Biden Romney getting together, like they'd fucking get crushed. It's
how were you supposed to energize Democrats behind, like, what are you energizing? And again, it's not like you've ever gotten Mitt Romney to vote against Republicans on anything that was of substance. Like, what's the proof that this dude would be fun or good? Or like, I don't understand this. They're so dumb. And this dude works for the New York Times, y'all. Like, he's one of their biggest columnists. Like, basically, it's just like, say what comes out of your mind. Don't need to back it up with facts, reporting, whatever, and send it to our tens of millions of subscribers and just put poison in there. Like, that's what this guy is hired to do. And this is the shit he comes up with.
Dude, I'm from Florida, and the Florida Democratic Party tries to do that move all the time, and they just lose every time. Like, very famously, they you know, when Rick Scott ran for governor, he ran as a Republican, obviously, just like this absolute alien of a fucking lizard man. They ran against him instead of like finding some like Democrat that they liked and whatever. They ran a guy named Charlie Crist.
I remember
who used to be a Republican. He was right. Like, they did the move where they were like, you know what, we'll run a Republican against the Republican, and they're gonna be like, whoa, you know, like, look how like reasonable they are, and like, look how much. What happened?
Nobody liked Charlie Crist. Get out of here.
Yeah, like the Republicans are like, look at this fucking turncoat traitor. And the Democrats are like, a Republican? Like, that's the whole fucking point of being a Democrat, is they don't like those people. You know, like.
Only the Dems. Like there's no planet that somebody would get on, say, Fox News and say, yo, you know who Trump should run? Joe Manchin. No chance. They just wouldn't do it. They just would never do something like that. They would never advocate for them. They would tell Trump, no, get like a really big Jesus guy, or get you know, a really big good xenophobia guy. Like, don't wait, get somebody who the base enjoys. He does something that the base enjoys. Don't hit me with this other crap that you're trying to do. But anyway, yeah, you guys should definitely be on the lookout to see what happens with Joe Biden in this pick, to see if Joe Manchin allows him to be president. Next up, of course, the New York Times, Nando. You know, they said that the quitting is contagious. In reference to the latest job reports, I think in November of 2021, a record 4.5 million American workers quit their job, beating the record of the previous month, which I think was about 3.2 million Americans. A lot of them are going into other jobs. And just, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the numbers, but what the New York Times, of course, took away from it was that white-collar people are having a great go of it. And, you know, they have the option to quit. They have savings so they can start new businesses. They have this, they have that, and it's fucking great, while never at any single time mentioning, you know, what certain politicians derisively called low-skill workers, what we just call just people who don't get paid that much, low-wage workers. They're the ones who are making the bulk of these quitting of the jobs, and, you know, and it's because they're the ones working the worst jobs.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is kind of a remarkable statistic that there are so many people quitting their jobs. I mean, I think it's probably too early to come up with some definitive reason why, or at least one factor. I mean, it's probably a variety of factors, not you know, the pandemic being chief among them, but also, you know, tight labor market, generous kind of government assistance over the, you know, from COVID, and you know, these supply chains disruptions, which are just you know, very much kind of making the actual work much more difficult. But like, the lead in the New York Times piece, I just like was just remarkable. I mean, this is the opening paragraphs from a woman named Emma Goldberg. She writes, "Something infectious is spreading through the workforce. Its symptoms present in a spate of 2-week notices. Its transmission is visible in real time, and few bosses seem to know how to inoculate their staff against this quitagen." Get it? It's a quitagen. It's not a contagion. And, you know, they cite a bunch of like weird psychological shit to explain this, but like, this is like an example of it. They go, "The office has long been a petri dish for infectious behavior. Lying, cheating, and job satisfaction all tend to spread from desk to desk. Financial advisors, for example, are 37% more likely to commit misconduct if they encounter teammates who have done so, what researchers refer to as peer effects, noting that one case of misconduct results on an average of an additional 0.59 cases. Employees also mimic the nutritional patterns of people they sit with in the cafeteria. Teammates are also suggestible to one another in far subtler ways than we realize." And you know, on some level, that's kind of been like an old Marxist thing in that it was kind of easier to organize the workforce in these kind of giant factories of, you know, St. Petersburg in Russia in 1915 or whatever, because they really had like 50,000 workers just like sitting side by side with each other, like, yo, this shit sucks. Doesn't it fucking suck? Like, this shit fucking sucks. You know, like, look at that fucking asshole. He's the boss. Like, what if we just, you know, but and employers here in America have kind of figured that out. They kind of try to isolate workers as much as they can. They don't let you, you know, congregate in large groups. They don't like it when you do that. But what this New York Times piece like doesn't contend with is these sort of hard economic factors beneath it all, in that people are fucking sick and tired of working these shitty jobs in unsafe conditions for low pay. I mean, that's a huge part of it, you know, like that's just absolutely a huge part of it. Like in the response in Jacobin, Alex Press points out that something like 20% of all healthcare workers have quit in the last year. I mean, it's insane. And you know, a large part of it is that they're like, fuck this. Like I'm sitting here working my ass off, seeing people die left and right, and feeling totally helpless and traumatized by it. But yeah, it's a quitation wise.
Yeah. And my favorite part of the piece was the lady said, quote, "So quitting begets more quitting, a challenge that employers can't always solve with raises or perks." Yeah. At the best jobs. Yes. At the best jobs, the freaking solve for a worker who is dissatisfied with how things are going is not going to be, yo, better health insurance, blah, blah. Like they already got all of that stuff, right? But not at the very bottom, which again makes up the bulk of the quitting. The bulk of the quitting is not people to have enough savings to pay their rent for a year in their bank account, yeah, right? Like it's not those people. You know, those are the type of people who quit and start side businesses, et cetera, et cetera. The people, most of the people who are quitting because the job is just so horrible. It's not worth it when you consider the pay, when you consider the risk, when you just consider the general unhappiness that you feel while in that job. It's just obvious, you know, when it comes to your, you know, your physical health, but also your mental and emotional health. Like everybody understands that these are the people that actually leaving the jobs. But of course, the New York Times, because, you know, they're, first of all, the workforce is a bunch of white collar, hoity toity, overeducated, fancy ass people. And then again, like their customer base sort of self selects for that. It is a bunch of people like me and Nando reading it and just being like, isn't that something? Maybe I should start a pottery business. You know what I mean? Like, it's not people who are just like, yeah, man, my fucking job is completely horrible. They're working me to the bone, to the nub. I'm barely able to pay my bills. I can never hang out with friends, do fun things, yada, yada, yada. Like, what are we doing over there? You know? And, but the funny thing is, like, I'll read a jobs report that details who is actually quitting these jobs in the New York Times. This is the most hilarious thing. Like numbers that this paper has published could tell you, like, this is ridiculous to make that the emphasis of this piece. But yet here we are.
Yeah. They don't want to talk to those icky people, though. They want to talk to like a creative director.
No. And that was another thing. That's who they talked to. Somebody who worked at a tech startup. Another person worked in digital marketing, a digital marketing firm. Like, this is, you know, creative industries, which is basically white collar, upper echelon type of job. You work at a startup in Silicon Valley. Like, trust me, they might be a startup, but it's not like me just being like, oh, I'm going to start making, you know, spaghetti out of my crib and selling it. No. These things are funded. They've got investment. You getting paid. You getting bennies. You ain't going to no shitty. This isn't like Silicon Valley, like 20, 30 years ago, where you might join a startup and it really be some like, oh man, this is on the border, but I believe in this thing. Like any startup you're going to over this, you're going to be fine. Again, like these are privileged jobs, bro. Like these people are good. They didn't go and ask some guy that works in a UPS warehouse or Amazon warehouse or, you know, some home health attendant, right, who's caring for older people, nursing home person. Like, they didn't talk to those people. They talked to You know.
Yeah. I've been wondering for a while, like, what they're going to do about all of this shit. Like, there's only so, you know, people, they're only going to tolerate this kind of shit for so long, you know, that they're going to find a way to force people to work, that they need some way to compel these people. And they're not going to just, like, raise wages like that. That's going to be, like, the last resort, you know, like, especially without the unions, you know, like we don't, you know, as union densities keeps going down. But so they're not going to, like, you know, fucking raise wages to compel people back to work. They're going to come up with some sort of authoritarian thing. I mean, it might start with just, like, you know, doing what they did in 1979 with Paul Volcker, when, you know, by just, like, inducing another recession and making people so desperate that they have to go back to work. And if not something even more authoritarian, I don't even want to think about that, but they're going to do something. Like, they need these people to work. These rich people are, they can't get a fucking drink at a bar in the Hamptons anymore.
Yeah.
You
know, it's not as fun being rich when you don't have people to lord over. Like, that's the whole point of all of this. Right? Like, if being rich just means you, like, stuff just gets harder, like, but they got to understand that we're at a tipping point too. It's just like, guys, like, you've got enough. You're still going to be filthy fucking rich. Stop for once, you know. And you know, fucking Jamie Dimon, even at a freaking seminar, was like, yeah, I think we've cleaved enough out of the tax system at this point. Like, literally, I think we've done enough, dude. Like, Jamie fucking Dimon even publicly said, yo, I think we might be good tax-wise. Like, we've taken enough from the people. But, you know, we'll see. And, of course, New York Times was continue to be cringe. But last but not least, Nando, we got a celebration today. None other than the Speaker of the House of Representatives. She's been that since 2006, no? Yes, yeah. Basically, said when the Dems took over the House because Iraq and all of that shit was going so horrible. Since 2006, Nancy Pelosi has been the Democratic leader in the House. She's back to Speaker. She is running again in 2022. She will be a spring chicken, 82 years old, in November of this year. Speaking of Silicon Valley, she is of that area of the state. She's rich herself. Her constituents are rich. Also, of course, she's the leader of the Democratic Party, as we know it. And, like, you know, Chuck Schumer is the leader in the Senate, but, like, he's not as influential as Nancy Pelosi is. No. She's basically the most powerful Democrat who's not in the executive branch. And she's 82 years old. And she's still going to run again in a place that's comfortably blue. Right. So it's like, that seat would go to another Democrat, and we could just move leadership onto somebody else. You're 82. You're 82. You can just give it to somebody else. But no, Nancy Pelosi's like, nah, I ain't done yet.
This is a problem that's plaguing the Democratic Party. I mean, it's just it's something that the Republicans don't have the same problem. Like, their leadership is nowhere near as old, and they have a different system. It's like a little arcane and complex, but they have a different system in how they kind of pick leadership, and it kind of encourages a little bit more cycle through, which means that they have a much deeper kind of political bench. I mean, you saw that in the last primary with the Democrats. You know, the guy who ended up winning was Biden, who's also, like, you know, 80 years old. And you have situations like where, you know, Senator Dianne Feinstein, who's 87, okay, there's reports, like, even her own staff are kind of leaking to the New Yorker at Jane Mayer that, like, her brain is not entirely there.
She's 87 years old, bro.
87. Wow. Yeah. Pelosi's key lieutenants are Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn. Steny Hoyer is 81. And Jim Clyburn, the guy who handed South Carolina to Joe Biden, is 80. Okay. It's great. You know, you love to see it. There's no kind of, there's no like 50-year-old powerful Democrat. You know what I mean? Like, there's no like 55-year-old even, which is not like a young person, but they're,
right.
But they're, you know, they still got a lot, they still got some energy left and still got something to look forward to in the future. But no, I love it. Nancy Pelosi, she's great. You know, she's been there forever and she's going to be with us forever. Like, we're going to, in 2050, when they upload Nancy Pelosi's, you know, consciousness, and some Silicon Valley tech guy is going to upload her consciousness into the cloud, and she's going to be
Speaker of the House, behalf of the Democrats. So yeah, that's your Democratic Party, folks. Just great. Just a party all about the people, all about the young people, all about, you know, sharing power, democracy, all of that great stuff. It's completely pathetic. That's our show for today. Of course, make sure you're checking out all the other Count the Dings offerings. Make sure, if you can, become a Patreon at patreon.com/Count the Dings for extra Count the Dings content. Man, we out of here. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Later.